The Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Stephen W., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Speakers, please note, you will be given 5 minutes and 1 minute reminders when it is time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Ron G.
Well, good evening, everybody. My name is Ron, and I'm an alcoholic. Whew. Marty, thank you very much for asking me to do this. It's always a privilege to have an opportunity to speak here at my home group. I really appreciate it. And welcome, everybody. Welcome. If you're new around here, if you're counting days, I really want to welcome you and just let you know that this thing works, and reach out to us. That's why we're here, is to help you. So you're welcome here. My sobriety date is November 10th of 2009, which means last month I celebrated 11 years sober, and it's my first time. And I'm just very grateful for that. And I really don't know how it happened, to be honest. I just followed along. I just did the things that were told to me when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, which was mainly for me not to figure anything out, to not use this to fix this, because I found out pretty quickly that my thinking was pretty much broken by the time I got in here. You know, I was sucked up and desperate and angry when I came to AA, and I thought for sure that this was not going to work. I was convinced that this was ridiculous and that I was never, ever going to be able to stop drinking or put my life back together, you know? And I felt abandoned a lot of times by alcohol. You know, when I took my first drink around 13, 14 years old, alcohol did something for me. You know, it did something for me that I've described to people who are normies, and they say that doesn't make sense to them. Just like it doesn't make sense to me that somebody would leave a half a glass of wine on the table or would go, oh, I'm feeling it, I'm done. You know, that just doesn't make sense to me. And what it did for me was it gave me a sense of belonging. You know, it gave me the opportunity to show up in the world and be okay with just being me. You know, when I was growing up, I was alone and afraid all the time. I was basically raised an only child, and I felt like I didn't have anybody to protect me, and I was always looking over my shoulder. I was sketchy, you know, and alcohol was a problem solver for me. You know, it made me feel not so alone and afraid anymore. It gave me the ability to fit in with the neighborhood kids. It changed the world. It made the colors more vivid. It gave me the ability to show up and talk, and it gave me better recall, names, dates, places. I was just more confident. And I thought that I was going to drink for the rest of my life. I was 100% convinced of it. You know, I was a very industrious kid. I was doing all kinds of things when I was young. I played chess and I did juggling and magic, and I built forts and stuff in my backyard. But by when I started drinking, all that stuff took a back seat. You know, all I wanted to do was party with my friends after that. And that's what I did. And I did that for a long time. I ended up going to college in San Francisco. And once I moved on campus, my drinking and use of other substances took a whole other step up. You know, I always had vodka in the freezer. I always had a flask or pipes or razor blades or plastic bags or something with me at all times. I was always, always in some state of intoxication. You know, I would wake up to smoke something, and I would drink for lunch, and I would do powders and hallucinogenics at night. That's just the way I did it, you know. And I had a love affair with alcohol. I had a really close relationship with alcohol. It was like my best friend. It was the one thing that never let me down. It was like, oh yeah, you and me, Bob. I love you. Me, yes, yes, you're always with me. Ooh, I've got it with me, thank God. Yeah, I've got bottles stashed. I was just always okay if I knew I had a drink nearby. You know, that feeling of not having anything and just knowing that you're going to be able to get off work and go to the liquor store felt okay even before I had a drink. That's just, I loved it. I loved it. I had a romance with alcohol. I love glasses and martini glasses and old stinky bars. And I just, the whole romance of alcohol and the way it made me feel was so attractive to me. And I also have that obsession. I know that I'm an alcoholic because I've heard this over and over again. Like, I have this obsessive mind that thinks about me all the time. I have this laser focus on me all the time. Sometimes I can't even shake it off. It's like, get off me. And alcohol made that go away. And then slowly, ever so slowly, it started to chip away at all the things that it had given me. It started slowly taking away all the things that it had given me. I needed more and more and more just to be confident, just to show up. I needed more. And I started doing things that I wasn't proud of, like showing up in the offices of people that I was asking for work at 9 a.m. wasted, or driving drunk, or lying, or stealing your stuff, or just being sketchy just so that I could make sure that I had enough to drink or time to party. It was number one in my life, and then there was everything else. And eventually what happened for me is I got fired from jobs. I did all the things that we talk about around here, you know. I just kept, as Sharon said, just sliding things across the bar to trade for another drink. Trading experiences, relationships, opportunities, all of that stuff. It took a second seat to alcohol. And eventually what happened for me is I got fired from another job again, and there I was alone, and I just went on this year and a half run not being able to move. Just all I could do was drink or smoke something and spend the money that I had saved. And I was powerless. I know what powerlessness is, man. I remember very, very clearly just lying on my couch, not being able to move, and my head just yelling at me like, get up, man, do something, get a job, get up. And I couldn't go outside. I didn't want you to see who I had become. I didn't want you to know who I was. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I hated myself. I had gotten to the point where I was just filled with such self-loathing and that soul sucking loneliness, just alone, man. And conversely, I would tell myself, don't get up. Don't you get up right now and go get another bottle. Don't you do that. And my feet would just start walking. And I'd be down at the liquor store before I knew it. And the guy across the counter who knew me would see me coming, and he'd give me that look like, oh man, there's that guy again. And he would just reach down to that bottom shelf and get that plastic bottle of rot gut vodka for $3 and slide it at me. And I'd be like paying for it with change. And I'd get it and I'd be like, no, 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 don't do this again. Don't drink this. And I would open it and I'm like, no, 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 don't do this. Don't do this, man. Stop, stop, stop. And I would drink it and tears would roll down my face. And there I was again, you know. And that's when I kind of got scared. You know, I knew that I had no way of controlling my drinking. And I tried for a long time. I tried doctors and blah, 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 all the things. And this is what happened. One day I came into my apartment and my knees buckled and I fell on the floor. And I said a word that I had never said in earnest in my life, which was God. I said, God, man, you got to help me. I don't know what to do. And I'm not a religion guy. I'm not organized religion person. But I think when the chips are down, we all say God, you know. And a weird thing happened. You know, I opened up to a friend of mine and I said, dude, I think I need to go to rehab or something. He's like, no, 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 don't go to rehab. Go to AA. Here's my friend Doug. Here's his number. He's sober. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to AA. I'm not going to do that. No, that's for losers. I'm going to make this work. And he was like, okay, fine. But I eventually called that guy and he met me after work and he sent me to a meeting in Ohio and called a guy named Eddie D. And he said, Eddie, dude, this guy Ron's coming. Give him a big book and show him how to do this thing. And I've been sober since that day. And I really don't know how that happened. All I did was do the things that people had suggested that I didn't understand, that I thought was weird, and I people that I didn't trust. And I saw all the steps and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do these things except for those and not that one. And the God thing, not doing that either. But I did it. And luckily it does, the steps don't care whether or not I believe if they're going to work. They just work anyway. And the last thing I'll say is that the last thing my sponsor told me, which was the whole idea of this program is to have a spiritual experience. And I didn't want to have a spiritual experience. I didn't want your God. And he was like, just fake it, man. Say a prayer someday. And I'm like, fine. I was like, sure. If you're real, show me. And I went to a meeting and Ronnie G stood up and he said that he didn't have to drink anymore and that he was 12 years sober and that he was happy most of the time. And it felt like he was talking just to me. And it felt like a spiritual experience. It felt like something weird. It felt exactly like that first drink. It became a sufficient substitute. This program, this connection to something bigger than me, became a sufficient substitute for alcohol that day. And I've kind of been chasing that ever since. And it has served me well. Like I said, if you're new around here, we're very happy you're here. Please reach out and ask for help. And I really appreciate all of you. Thank you to all the examples in this room. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Ron. Our second 10-minute speaker is Patricia M.
Hi, my name is Patricia and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Marty, for asking me to speak. Thank you, Ron, for your 10 minutes. My sobriety date is February 17th, 2012. I got sober here in the Pacific Group about 8 years ago. I now live in New York City. I moved about 3 years ago and have been in Atlantic Group and 79th Street Workshop out here. I chair a meeting on Friday night. So if anybody wants to speak there, I've reached out, I know, to a bunch of you already. But I'm really glad to be back here in my, original home group. I have an overwhelming flow of emotions coming in and just feel extreme gratitude for the fact that not only that I'm sober, that I was lucky enough to land in such an awesome home group initially, and so and there's great there's great AA everywhere. I want to thank my sponsor Darlene M, who has stuck with me through the through my move, and all my previous sponsors who it's really funny. I think back to my early days in sobriety and, just how out of my mind I was and how there were so many people who just were with me and rooting me on and cheering for me and just just with me in the crazy. And somehow, from that point to now, I was able to stay sober. So I'll talk a little bit about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I grew up in New Jersey. I was a really shy child. My parents got divorced when I was pretty young. I think I was about 3 or 4 years old. And, and I feel like I kind of escaped early on through just fantasy and books and just being in my head a lot, dreaming, imagining things, just not really being present. My parents fought a lot and they were in court for actually the majority of my life until I graduated college from, the time I was little. So they were sort of preoccupied with that. And, I grew up in a really nice area, but it always kind of felt like the insides, what was going on inside me and, kind of my emotions, life, my feelings. And then, the way that we were expected to show up on the outside of life, to events, to different things, didn't really ever match. And, I definitely, I'm thinking I was a shy child. Moving onward, I struggled with just relationships, friendships, that kind of thing. I was just very, internally focused. And, I think it was around, I was about 11 years old and, a series of events all happened at once that, my dad had gotten remarried. you know, a few other things happened. You know, I had like some kind of assault happen to me at that time as well. And I remember there was just this moment where I felt like life was unfair. Like, why is this happening to me? And like, God doesn't like me because of all these things happening. So, you know, that was kind of a turning point. I feel like from that point on, there was, you know, that light that we're naturally, I feel like, born with, a lot of us, sort of started to go out a little bit. And, you know, I had developed an eating disorder early on. And then, you know, from that point on, I remember the first time I had alcohol, I think I was on a trip. It's kind of foggy, but I think I was on a trip to Hawaii where my dad took us with his new wife's family, and they were trying to like bond us all together. And there were like Mai Tais that were, you know, non-alcoholic and then that were alcoholic. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go for the alcoholic ones. And I remember doing that. And I was so mad at my dad. I was just kind of an angry, like withdrawn person. And, you know, I drank the alcoholic one. And I remember I was like on the hula line, like dancing with the hula people and just, wow, this is so much fun. You know, I didn't feel angry anymore. And that was my first experience with alcohol that I remember. So fast forward, you know, it got worse from there. You know, I feel like high school, I went to an all girls school, Catholic private school. And it was like, you know, it was like how we show up for others to see us and then what we did behind closed doors. And, you know, we were, you know, I started to hang out with a group of people who we were sneaking out. I grew up in New Jersey. We would sneak out to go to New York City and just go to all the clubs, like really young, and, you know, did a lot of damage to myself, like a lot of, thank you, trauma, that kind of stuff. So fast forward, I ended up going to treatment for an eating disorder when I was 22, and they took us to AA meetings for some reason. And, you know, I had a bunch of people before then suggest AA. And I was like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I know I probably need it, but I knew that if I went that I would have to stop drinking. And, I wasn't ready for that because I didn't know how I could live my life without alcohol. So, so I was like, kind of put it in the back, like, you know, in the back of my mind, like, okay, if it ever gets really bad, I could go there. So I remember the first time that I went to an AA meeting, I just felt this overwhelming like amount of love and compassion and just like a welcomed feeling that I had never felt before. And, you know, and now I know what people say when they say that, you know, AA does for them slowly what alcohol did for them quickly, because I feel like that feeling of connection and spirit and like joyfulness that I feel walking into AA meetings was really what I was looking for, you know, in my drinking a lot of the time. So I ended up, you know, I didn't get sober that first time. I, you know, had, like I said, another issue that, that did get better. And I thought that was my issue. And, you know, life just kept sort of circling the drain. Like it wasn't really like, I wasn't getting anywhere. And I did go in and out of AA all throughout my 20s. And, you know, it didn't really stick. I didn't actually get, you know, sober. And then I ended up moving out for graduate school to Los Angeles. And I remember talking to a couple of friends, and I had just gotten out of this really crazy relationship. And I was kind of at a bottom. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And she was like, why don't you try going back to AA? So I was like, okay, but it didn't make sense at the time, because I wasn't like alcoholically drinking as bad as it was. But what I didn't know is that I was, you know, suffering from the untreated alcoholism that, you know, we hear people talk about, which is just like, you know, the restless irritability, discontentment. So I ended up going to a meeting. It was like, I think it was on Ocean Park Boulevard, that you have to be like 10 years and over to share. I forget what it was, something like that. And I remember just being baffled, like people actually stayed. And like, you know, cause I was in and out. I was like, wow, people actually stay and their lives get better. And here's a whole program for living. Like I had no idea, you know, I was just like in and out. So I ended up through a whole series of events that seemed like godly inspired. I ended up in the Pacific group, you know, and I got my first sponsor. And I want to say, like, I think the gifts that I've gotten from the sobriety are just like absolutely tremendous. Like, you know, sometimes I can find myself going into my head thinking of the things that I don't have and the dreams that maybe aren't happening yet. And then I think about, there was a time in my life where I didn't even know what I have now was possible. It was a dream I didn't even have, because I didn't know that I could feel, you know, this content in my own skin most of the time, confident, you know, feel like I could show up for things, follow through. I could be a part of, I could do my part. You know, I didn't have to be the victim, you know, in life. Like I, you know, could really, and the steps really helped me with that. I've been through the steps several times. And, you know, there's so many amazing people in this group who have really dedicated their time to me, especially when I was new, my first 5 years when I was out there. And, you know, I'll always appreciate that. I feel like being here in New York has been awesome in so many ways, you know, but I really feel like there's no way I would have been able to come back here, be around my family, and live the life that I'm living, you know, if I didn't have this really strong foundation, you know, that I got early on. You know, I remember early on in sobriety, my first sponsor, you know, Leslie, I was telling her, you know, I can't go to work. I feel so anxious. And she was like, I was like, I can't go. I'm going to have to quit my job. And she was like, okay, you can just show up, you know, anxious. And that was like a whole new thing to me. Like, I didn't know that I could like show up to life and like do these things and have these feelings and still like show up, you know, to life. And, you know, by the grace of God, I have like this beautiful life today. You know, I have my own place in the city. I'm the director at my job, you know, just showing up one step and foot in front of the other, like, you know, sort of with all the stuff that I've learned in AA has really provided me this absolutely beautiful life today that I'm, you know, will be always grateful for. I get to be a part of my family, you know, for better, for worse sometimes, but, you know, I get to learn, you know, how to live a life without alcohol today, sober, and just incredibly grateful again. And thank you so much, Marty, again, for asking me to share. And it's so good to see all of your faces. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Our main speaker tonight is Tamara B.
Hi, everybody. My name's Tamara Burleson from Roseville, California. I'm an alcoholic, and it's really great to be here with you tonight. And I thank you, Marty, for inviting me. It was really fun hanging out in the green room with everybody, and Piper and Dawn and Patricia and I just hung in there till the very end. And then they threw us to the wolves. But it's really great to be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you hear nothing else, it's near and dear to my heart. It always has been. A little bit about me. My sobriety date is May 29th, 1989. So I've been with you about 31 years and 6 months and 2 days today. And I've protected that sobriety date from the very, very beginning of my sobriety. I have a sponsor. I've been very active with a sponsor since I was 4 days sober and found that sponsor. And she knows she sponsors me, let me tell you. And I'm in touch with her on a regular basis. I see her with Zoom. It's so cool because I get to meet her once a week at a meeting, and I'm in touch with her during the week. I have a home group. I've always had a home group. My first home group was near and dear to me, and that was a Bellflower Big Book group in Bellflower, California. And I was sponsor directed then to go to Pacific Group once a month when my sponsor would be there visiting. And so I love this. You know, the structure of these meetings have played such an incredibly important role in my life. And I'll probably get teary tonight talking about it. First of all, I want to thank Ron for a wonderful share. I sure related to that sense of belonging that drinking gave us. Boy, a drink would calm my nerves right now. It works for me, okay? I know it does. Alcohol always worked for me. You know, and in that room with Patricia, we related. I really enjoyed you too, Patricia. And we related moving in sobriety, moving from a home group and the people you sobered up with and that you dearly love, and you leave your sponsor, the home group, the whole thing. And it was really hard, but thank goodness that you've taught us the structure and disciplines to get along in another area. You know, so for me, I want to tell you that I drank alcoholically for a little over 21 years. I started drinking when I was around 13 years old. I'm a bar drinker. I love the bars so much so that I started going to them with fake ID when I was 16 years old. And that was an awesome thing. I had so much fun in those bars. you know, and I loved the bars until the very end of my drinking too. You know, I married at 18, I divorced at 21. To back up, I was born and raised in an alcoholic home. My father was an alcoholic. I loved him to pieces. To me, he was like the Pied Piper. I just thought he was awesome. But I didn't see him in his real bad state. You know, he was gone a lot, partying and drinking. He and my mother would divorce when I'm in the sixth grade, and it's because of the alcoholism, you know. And so I drank and carried on, and I want to be real clear, his drinking had nothing to do with mine. I drank from the beginning for the effect. I drank alcoholically, as I mentioned, and my alcoholism from the very get-go, I drank for that effect. It went down inside of me and it just made everything calm and my shoulders got relaxed. I just absolutely loved how alcohol worked for me until I overshot the mark. And that happened from the beginning. You know, I would black out, I would pass out. You know, 21 years of drinking, I was really doing basically the same thing I was in the very beginning of my drinking. And that is, my friends would tell me what I did the night before because I kind of lost memory of it, blacked out a bit. So I met this little guy in high school. I married at 18, as I mentioned. I divorced at 21. And then I meet this really cool guy and he's from out of town. He's about 10 years my senior, and I just love this guy. We had so much fun. Friends of mine introduced me to him. He lived in California. I lived in Oregon. And I'm not real proud to tell you that, you know, the reason we broke up a few months later was because I was dating a married man and he had a wife and four children at home. And I'm never proud to tell you that, but it's the truth of how this alcoholic drank. That's how I drank. I had no morals. I wasn't raised this way, you guys. And I had no, you know, sky's the limit. This guy was fun. So, hey, just go for it. You know, and we both knew it was wrong. And after a few months, we started caring a little bit of too much about each other and we broke that off. You know, and it was right around that time of being 21 and kind of breaking it off with him. I decided to go visit a friend in Ventura and she welcomed me and I ended up staying in Ventura for 15 years. That's called a geographic. I had no idea, you know, when I went there that I was going to move there. And I went there with a suitcase and a handbag and I ended up living there all those years, you guys. I mean, I came home to Oregon and moved my stuff, you know, officially, but that's just how I was. I was a little vagabond. My family couldn't believe it. I was born and raised in the country out in Salem, Oregon. And I had three older brothers and they just couldn't believe I was moving to California. Nobody in my family had moved out of town. And here I'm the youngest, just about to move away. And why? Because it's sunny in California. I just loved it there. You know, and so that's how I moved. And I lived there for some time. And I don't know, I was probably in my maybe mid to late 20s and I marry again. And the weird thing was my first husband was John. My second husband was John. The first mother-in-law was Mary and my second mother-in-law was Mary. So even way back then, I was doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And, you know, all that time, well, the second marriage only lasted about a year as well, maybe 3 years on paper, but we lived together for a year, you know, and all that time, I always chose someone who drank a little bit more than I did. And, you know, so the focus was on them. I didn't want to be the one that people had to focus on, you know, with my drinking. And I never thought I had a problem with drinking. I just thought I liked to go out and have a good time. And, you know, there shouldn't be a problem with that. So I'm living in Ventura, and what happens is after my second marriage and divorce, I decide to another geographic. I go to the Bay Area, and I moved to the Bay Area. I don't even remember the year, and I lived there for 1 year, and then I'm back in Oregon, another geographic, and I'm in Oregon for maybe 6 months, and all of a sudden, I get a phone call from my brothers, and I'd been out on a drunken night and they had tried calling me, and And I didn't get the message till early the next morning. And what happened was my father was diagnosed with Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, which is acute alcoholism. And he went into the hospital for some time. And then they changed him to a hospital in Portland. And then we finally placed him in a nursing home. And you guys, I'm here to tell you, he was only 68 years old when that happened. And I'm 67 now. And I cannot imagine going to a nursing home now and living there for the next 13 years of my life and dying from this disease. And that's what happened to my dad. You know, he missed out on all of his grandkids. You know, now, you know, I thought he was old when he went into that nursing home. But now I look back, it's like, God, I'm 67. It just hits home with me, you know. And so, and I always drank the opposite of him. I never hid my bottle anywhere. I didn't hide a bottle. I drank in front of y'all. I didn't care. You know, if you knew how much I drank, that was just not a problem. So why hide it? You know, so what happens from there is I meet this guy when I go back to Oregon, that guy that I fell in love with when I was 21. And I'm now in my early 30s somewhere. And I go back to Oregon, and through a series of events, that guy that I had met and fell in love with when I was 21 had just gone through his second divorce. I had been through my second divorce, and we got together and started dating. And we're both clean and divorced at this time. Hadn't seen each other in years, but we had mutual friends. So we're dating long distance, and it's a crazy, wild relationship long distance. And I'm flying down south to see him, and he's coming to visit me, and we're drunk most of the time. And it was just one of those whirlwind romances, let me tell you. And finally, we decided it would be best if I just moved back down to Southern California. So after about a year and a half of long distance dating, I moved back down to Southern California. And that's when I like to say he introduced me to daytime drinking, but I knew about daytime drinking and I loved it. And I loved, Ron mentioned the stinky bars. I loved the bars that when you walk in, you smell the restroom. And the reason I say that, they know how to pour a drink. You know, I drank Red Label scotch and soda tall with a twist. And man, when I would go to a fun, fancy dancing bar, they would give me this much scotch and, you know, pour it up with soda. The bars I drink in, it's golden all the way up, baby. And it's got a little splash of soda and a little twist of lemon. And those are some good drinks. They know how to pour and you get there fast. And that scotch just worked for me for a long time. You know, I loved it. I loved the bars. I loved, you know, I always kept a little daytime job going back. You know, thinking back, Ron mentioned magic when he was a kid. I was in my 20s doing a little magic show. I was a magician's assistant for a while, and that was just a wild time, hiding my booze in my purse in order to do the show. And, you know, I was just a case. But anyway, so I always had a little job of some kind, you know, and when I had moved back down to Southern California, I started working and, you know, my friends were all drinking in the bar and I would get off at 5, 6 o'clock and I need to be in that bar drinking with them. So I kind of wrote my own paycheck. So I would kind of leave these companies high and dry. They wouldn't know that I would leave 3 hours early to get to the bar and party with my friends. But it was just kind of a fun thing. And I like to say right now that I got to clean that up with my amends. I got to clean that up and pay back and do all the things that we learn here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want to tell you that when I moved back down south, I'm drinking hard with him and with a group of friends. And we're all like-minded when it comes to drink. And my last night out, you guys, was really not like any, I mean, I had a lot of bad nights, okay? I had a lot of bad nights, but I never thought of not drinking. Why would I do that? I never even thought I had a problem drinking. So my last night out was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. My last drink in a bar was at Captain Jack's in Seal Beach. And then we went to a friend's boat. And I practically got all of us kicked off of that boat. And the next day, nobody would talk to me. And and this guy's going to be kicked out of his boat slip. And it was just an absolute mess. One more time, I'm having to apologize to all my friends, but nobody would answer the phone that day. And something clicked in my head that day, and I'm sitting in my backyard, and it's May 29th, and I'm sober and I'm hungover. And I'm thinking, I've got to quit drinking, but I didn't understand how I was going to do that, because there were so many things coming up in life that I needed to attend. And I have to drink here because I'll be the life of the party. This year, we're going to be with his family for Christmas. I need to be the life of the party, so I need to drink. Next year, we'll be in Oregon. I was 10 years down the road with those types of thoughts coming into my mind. And what happened next was I called Central Office in Long Beach. And I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew no one in the program. I didn't know anything about, I didn't even know what a sobriety date was. And I called AA, and a lady answered the phone with a deep whiskey voice. And she said, Alcoholics Anonymous, may I help you? And I said, yes, I have this friend. And she can't stop drinking. You know, what do you guys do? And the lady said, oh, where does your friend live? What area is she in? And you know what? I kept the lie up. And I find it sad that I have to lie about that on the phone to someone. But I kept the lie up the entire time on the phone with her that day. She sent me to a little meeting the next night. The next night I'm 2 days sober. I get to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to take a minute here to tell you that I hope I never treat anybody like that at any meeting I go to, especially my home group or any of my committed meetings. But that night when I walked in, I didn't get greeted. Nobody told me about a big book. I sat down, people stood up and said their sobriety date. And so it was my turn. And I stood up and said, my name's Tamara. I'm an alcoholic for the first time. And I sat down crying, and the girls next to me didn't say, there, here's my phone number. I didn't leave with any numbers, and I didn't feel welcomed. And quite frankly, I didn't know if I'd make it to another meeting. But when I started to leave that night, a little couple came up to me, Merle and Margaret. And Merle talked I guess he was pretty gruff in meetings, but that night he had a very soft voice. And he said, you know, Tamara, there's going to be another meeting here 2 nights from now, and I want you to come back to that. We'll be here. He said, why don't you come back to that meeting? And 2 nights later, I'm four days sober, and I came back to that meeting. And I really didn't want to, but it was, my other half was drinking a lot that day, and I thought, well, I guess I'll go to another one of those meetings and get struck sober, you know. Anyway, so I get to that meeting, and I'm so grateful I went there, because in the front of the room, this lady welcomed me. She extended her arm out and gave me her hand and said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Pat. It was Pat Y from Pacific Group. And she welcomed me, and she was to be the speaker that night. And that wasn't even her home group, you guys. And she was the one to welcome me. And she was with two other ladies, Debbie H, now Debbie D, and Linda R. And those two were from Bellflower Big Book Group. And those three ladies not only welcomed me, but they invited me to sit with them. They took me to the literature table, and they said, pick out any pamphlets that look good to you. And they took me in. They gave me phone numbers. And by the end of the night, I asked Debbie if she would be my sponsor. So I was 4 days sober, and I got a sponsor. And the next day, she asked me to call, and I did. And I just started doing everything that she suggested to the best of my ability. You guys, I've done things right, wrong, made all kinds of mistakes here. But the thing is, I've done, and I continue to do to the best of my ability what she has asked me to do. You know, that night meant so much to me, to have those three ladies welcome me like that. And it was the next day that, it was a few days later. It was June 5th, and I'm going to be going to my first meeting at my home group, and it's Bellflower Big Book Group, and Debbie had given me the address. And I show up, and it's June 5th, 1989, and there's Johnny, who is going to take a 31-year cake that night. Clancy would be there to give him the cake. So, you know, the room is just packed with people. And I'm just like, this is my first experience with a home group. And I'm like, woo, this is, I was on overload. But the girls at the door welcomed me. You know, Rich W. from up here, I saw him at a meeting the other day, and he was in the greeter line that night. And everybody welcomed me, and they were so kind, and I felt a part of, and that little friend of mine, Linda, saved me a seat that night. And I remember that night at the podium, it was almost time for birthdays, and a lady got up and said, we celebrate birthdays here for 365 days of continuous sobriety, free from alcohol or anything else that affects us from the neck up. And I turned to my friend Linda and I said, does that mean cocaine? I can't do any cocaine. She smiled at me really big and said, well, yeah, you can't do any cocaine. Why did you? And I said, no, but I was really upset, you guys, because I found this to be AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. They said nothing about anything else. How am I going to do life without anything in my system? You know, I was days sober when she told me that. And I was really shocked, you know, but I left that meeting thinking, okay, it's all, and I didn't have any of that on me, but I only took coke to keep me on the bar stool longer. You know, that's why I did it. So, that's my first experience at a home group, and it was so loving, and everybody was so inviting, you know, and Linda and Karen and I became fast friends. Another little gal that came along a month later, they started calling us the amigos, and we ran around together and just had a big time. We went everywhere. We went to conventions, you know, we went to coffee and dinner before the meetings, and we just had such a great time. And I was under 30 days sober, you guys, and I went to the Pacific group for the first time. And I was so scared, and Linda had to cancel. She was sick. So I had to go by myself, and I was so scared. And this was 1989, June of 1989. And there was 1,150 people that went to your meeting then every Wednesday night. And I'm in a line outside. I'd never seen anything like it. And I'm waiting for them to open the doors, and it was scary. And I'm talking to people in line, and all of a sudden it got a little more comfortable. They were kind to me. They were loving. And we get all the way up to the door, and I get to the last greeter, and she said, well, Tamara, are you still sober? And it was Pat Y. And she made me feel like a million bucks. She made me feel welcome. And I was so scared. And she saw the deer in the headlight look in my face. And I said, I'm supposed to find my sponsor. How do I do that with all these people? She said, oh, Tam, just walk in the door, take a left, go up by the stage. She'll be talking to her sponsor, Millie. And that was my first night to meet my grand sponsor. And we would go on. I would have Millie in my life for 30 years. And what a blessing. What a beautiful, you know, and that was the, oh my gosh, that all the greats were there. God, I just remember so many people being there. Marianne King and Clint Hodges and Sharon C., of course, who's here tonight, and Barney Morris and Clancy. And, you know, all these people were there, and it was exciting. And I went up to meet Millie and Debbie. My sponsor said, okay, I've got a commitment, so I'm going to run off now, Tam. You go ahead and have a nice time and look me up before the meeting's over to say goodbye. She left, and I felt all alone. And I walked out. Thank God I smoked then. I walked out on that back area to smoke, and I ran into three of the gals from Bellflower Big Book Group. They took me under their wing and said, where are you sitting? And I said, I don't know. And they said, are you by yourself? And I said, yes. They said, come sit with us. So, you know, you guys took care of me again, you know. That was such a cool meeting, being there that first night, and I walked through my fears. So, you know, I've had a sponsor over the years that's insisted I go through the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the concepts, the service manual. She's taken her time to do all of that with me. I turn a year sober, and I'm blessed with a couple of sponsees at Bellflower Big Book Group. And boy, my program really accelerated at that point. You know, when I started working with women and taking them through the steps and all the literature that has, you know, I've been taking through with my sponsor, things really started to change for me. I was a year and month, 7 months sober, you guys. He is still drinking. He's at home drinking. And what happened for me is I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted more of this. And I knew that I couldn't live the life I was living with him any longer. He was still drinking, and I knew I couldn't live that way any longer. My sponsor and all of you told me to take this program home, and I'm so grateful for that, because I tried to the best of my ability to take this program home. I tried to talk about my drinking with him, not his drinking. And I tried that for a year and 7 months. And what happened was I went to him one night and I said, Lim, I'm going to have to leave you. And it's not because I don't love you. It's because I found a new way to live here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want more of it. I had just fallen in love with this program and I wanted more of it. And I wanted to stay with you guys. I wanted to stay sober. I didn't want to drink again. I did not want to go back out. And I thought if I stayed in that relationship, it would probably take me back out. And because you taught me to talk about my drinking, that night, by the end of our conversation, he said, I want to come. I want to go to a meeting. And he went to the Monday night meeting, and my sponsor said, introduce him to two of your favorite guys. And I did. I introduced him to Freddie and to Freddie L and to Johnny and Ray M. And I was told to just leave him alone, just, you know, let him work with them. Now, I thought I'd be a good sponsor for him, but apparently my sponsor thought that was a bad idea. So he ended up getting another sponsor and worked with the guys in the program. And because of you, he turned 29 years sober this last January 1st. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous and all of you, you know, and I am so grateful for it, because since then, since he sobered up, you know, we moved in sobriety. As I mentioned, it was a very hard move because we loved this program so much. We loved our home group, and it was tough to move, but we moved to Folsom, and you guys taught us structure and discipline, and we weren't seeing a lot of that in the meetings we were going to. So we waited about a year, and we just kept calling our sponsors and talking to them about the format and getting copies of it. And we were able to start a couple of meetings up here with the same type of structure and discipline that we were used to. The big book tells us that, you know, that we can share the fellowship we crave. And we got to do that with a couple of little meetings. And we started out with five people. And in September, we turned 26 years old. And like any other group, we've had a couple of splits or whatever, but you know, now we're on Zoom. We have Zoom and live. So between both meetings, there's still a good 80, 85, 90 people that are showing up every week. And it's structure and discipline, and we love it. And we, Barnacle Bill moved up here about a year later, and we started a little speaker meeting. And same thing with that speaker meeting. Because of the structure and discipline, we got to start that meeting, and it grew, and it's still going on 25 years later, you know. So we're so grateful of our base that we had at Bellflower Big Book Group. We owe a lot to, I really thank Johnny for the structure and discipline of that group, because it was really an incredible thing to be able to start something like that up here. So what it's like today, you know, I remain teachable. I work with my sponsor. I'm in the middle. I don't know if I stopped doing any of the things that I started doing when I was a newcomer. I don't know which one of them would really upset the apple cart. And I don't want to drink again, so I just do it all. You know, every morning I was taught when I was new to get on my knees with God in the morning, first thing, ask him to keep me sober. I don't have the power and strength on my own. And getting on my knees humbles me. And I started doing that morning and night. And I just started doing, you know, like I say, everything a sponsor said. So I do the same things today. I remain teachable. I work with others. I sponsor a bunch of beautiful women, some who are here tonight. And, you know, it's so incredible to work with others and give away what has been so freely given to me. You know, the love you guys have filled me with, the life that you've given me. My husband and I have 12 grandkids. They're my step, 12 grandkids and four great grand. And those grandkids and those great grands have not seen us drunk, you know, and that's incredible because the kids saw plenty of it, you know, when they were growing up. So, you know, working with others has been the joy in my heart. It has been an absolute joy, and it's just enlarged everything about my life. You know, being on my knees morning and night, you know, the big book tells me that I have to enlarge my spiritual life. So it's been a journey. It's changed, and it's, you know, gotten out of shape and back in shape, and it's changed and it's grown. And the God in my life is so big. He's so big. And I sometimes forget he's there. I forget to rely on him. And then I have to pull it back, because when I do, you know, that is when my life just gets even better. You know, I've done a lot of things in sobriety, general service, H&I, which I really miss right now. I have a little Roseville jail here that I was taking meetings into, and it's awesome. And I know we'll get back there. You know, thank goodness for Zoom with this pandemic. I tell you, the meetings, my committed meetings that I've always been taught to go to 3 committed meetings a week and then some in between. But those 3 committed meetings for me all went on Zoom, and what a blessing it's been to be here with you guys, you know, on Zoom. We can go anywhere in the world too, and that's really been fun. So I know for me, a life of service is the finest life I can live. That is what I'm supposed to be doing here. You know, that's the beginning and end of it, a life of service. And I've learned that right here. And like I say, I was born and raised in a great home with parents that tried to teach me well, but somewhere along the line, I just got out there, you know. And I know God didn't give me this sobriety to just be sitting home in a rocking chair, you know, so I'm active. I'm in the middle. That sponsee relationship with me, the relationship I have with my sponsor is like no other, you guys. I had a mother that I loved dearly, and this mom of mine could not begin to tell her half of the things that I've done out there. Those things that are degrading, you know, it would have broken her heart. My sponsor knows all of that. She knows the good, bad, and the ugly. The growth I've had with my sponsor, I haven't had to change a thing. I haven't had to go back out and drink. I haven't had to change home groups other than when I moved. She's taught me how to play well with others and stay. If there's a problem, don't run. Imagine me, I quit running many years ago. I want to tell you that little Merle and Margaret that I talked about at the beginning of the meeting, over the years, I would see them once in a while. And when I saw them, I would cry because they were kind of my Eskimos here, they and Pat Y. And so Merle and Margaret, I ran into Merle at a restaurant one day, and I'm about a year sober, and he was missing an entire leg up to his hip. And I said, Merle, what happened? And I started crying. And he said, honey, don't cry for me. He said, my goodness, I have diabetes. A lot of people in the program have diabetes. And he said, they just took a limb, that's all. I'm all still here. I still go to meetings. Margaret and I are doing great. So don't cry for me. I couldn't believe that. It was like, wow, what an example, you know? And so later on, I'm with my amigos, and we're at a Southern California convention. And I see Merle and his wife at this convention. And I always got a little teary-eyed when I said hello and greeted them, and because I didn't see them at regular meetings. And when I went over to Merle and Margaret and said hello, he said, honey, with a big smile on his face, we've got something to tell you, don't we, Margaret? And I thought they were going to tell me about a 50th reunion, wedding reunion or something. And they were such a dear couple. And he said, honey, I want to tell you. He said, you know, even doctors are fallible. And he said, the doctors took the wrong leg. And he said, and my wife and I have decided that I'll just live my life out. And they just looked at each other in each other's eyes. And they had the biggest sparkles going on in their eyes, and you could see the God in their eyes. And he said, yeah, it's been a good life. And he said, I just don't want to live, you know, without both limbs. And you guys, what an example. The examples I've seen here have been tremendous. I want to be like that when I grow up. You know, we've had a lot of losses ourselves in sobriety. We lost a daughter, my husband's daughter, 4 years ago. And 6 days later, my brother, my oldest brother, passed away. And it was a hard time. But you guys taught us we just go to meetings. That's all. Doesn't matter if they died that day. We go to our regular meeting that night. We suit up and show up. It doesn't matter if my Tammy Faye makeup is running down the front of my cheeks as I get to the meeting. What matters is that I go to the meeting and I share my hurt with you and I share my truth with you, because every time I do, I get closer to you and I get closer to the God of my understanding. I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I have so many friends in AA. I have friends out of AA from the first grade, but the people and the friends that I've made here in AA are incredible. AA sisters that I love and adore, sponsees, my sponsor, you know, the other thing, you know, I've made a lot of friends, as I mentioned, in AA, and there's this one friend that we had a little, we were estranged for a while, and we got back together because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we got back together here a couple of years ago as friends, and we went, she took me, a friend took me on a 10-day cruise, you know, all expenses paid, you know, and we picked up where we left off. And life has been good. And I am just so grateful for everything you've given me. And I'll continue to pay it forward. Thank you.
We celebrate AA birthdays at this meeting. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything which would affect you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. Ann Alcoholic.
Please email her by 6:30 that evening. Otherwise, you have to wait until the following week to be recognized. We have several birthdays tonight, and we've asked a special guest to sing a happy birthday song to our celebrants.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back.
Thank you so much, Frank. Our birthdays tonight are, we have Alex W. for 1 year. His sponsor is Christopher H. We have Sarah A. for 12 years. Her sponsor is Carla R. We have Bill G. for 32 years. His sponsor is Joe S. We have Betty H. for 35 years. Her sponsor is Laura McSee. We have Don H. for 39 years. Her sponsor is Nancy M. We have Jeff N. for 39 years. His sponsor is Johnny H. So we had 6 birthdays for a total of 158 years. The average is 26.33. Happy birthday, recipients. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on your birthday cake. At the end of the year, this candle money is our contributions to AA World Services, organizations worldwide, excuse me. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. Underneath special announcements,